You know, we've seen it in TV and movies. We've read about it as children's books. We've heard it in church and Sunday school, most of us, since we were tiny. But as we've been talking about the last few weeks, these are real things that happen to real people. These aren't plastic saints on a shelf. These are real people with real emotions and real problems. And the more we look at the story of Jesus coming into this world from the lens of them being just like us, the more I think we can understand it. There's a wonderful teaching technique that I've used from time to time. We learned years ago in Bible, as a disciple Bible study, and that is put yourself in the story. As you read that biblical passage, don't read it from the outside looking in. Don't read it with 21st century eyes looking back. Just try to put yourself in the story. What would you experience? Were you there when this was happening? And I think it's important that we do that so that we can really, truly begin to understand the meaning and the weight of what's going on here. If you've got your Bibles and like to turn with me, you'll be in Luke chapter 2 today, and it's very familiar words, but let's try to look at it with another lens. Luke writes this, "And it came to pass in those days that a decree went out from Caesar Augustus that all the world should be registered. This census first took place when Quirinius was governing Syria, so all went to be registered, everyone to his own city." Anybody here born in Hazard? There are some other people here that were born other places. I was born in Virginia. Tim was born in Ohio. Kennedy was born in Lexington. So here this government mandate goes out that you need to go to your hometown to be taxed. And it says, "Joseph also went up from Galilee out of the city of Nazareth into Judea to the city of David, which is called Bethlehem, because he was of the house and lineage of David to be registered with Mary, his betrothed wife, who was with child." Now think about that just a minute. That's a simple, short sentence. But let's think about what it means. How did Mary get from Galilee to Bethlehem? Really? Where does it say that? Or is that just another one of those things that we've been told and we've seen in movies and read in stories and looked at the picture in picture books? Maybe there was a donkey. Maybe there wasn't. Bible doesn't say there was. So let's think about it for a minute. From the city of Nazareth to the city of Bethlehem in the old days was somewhere between 75 and 90 miles, and you traveled down the western edge of the mountains to the vicinity of Jerusalem, and then you took a hard left and climbed up to the city of Jerusalem, and then you went down to the city of Bethlehem. Mary is 9 months pregnant. 75 miles, 9 months pregnant. How would you like to take off today and walk to Pikeville? Anybody game for that journey? So here's the problem. 75 to 90 miles, average walking speed of traveling was, you might get 15, 20 miles a day. Unless you were a healthy young man, you might get 30 miles a day. It was at least a three-day trip and probably closer to five. And oh, by the way, if Mary was seated amongst the baggage, side saddle on a donkey, still didn't travel any faster because Joseph was walking ahead of the donkey leading it. You know, we so easily think about today, well, hey, let's run to Lexington, we'll do a little shopping, we'll go to Olive Garden and have dinner, and we'll come back and we'll be home in time to watch whatever on TV tonight. That wasn't the case here. So here's this young family. You got a man who's 30-something that's leaving his home and his business and going to be gone probably in their planning for 2 weeks to make this journey with his heavily pregnant wife. And oh, by the way, people are going to be taxed or to pay their census fees and what have you. And we're along the road and there wasn't any, there's no Kentucky State Police, no Perry County Sheriff's Office. And let's see, if you're a robber looking for an easy mark, how about a bunch of people taking their tax money along the road? Well, where are we going to eat along the road? No McDonald's. Where are we going to stop and take those necessary breaks along the road, which you women who have been pregnant know happens very quickly and very often in your ninth month? No Shell station to stop and use the facilities. Go find a hedge. See? You got to put yourself in. We read that, and oh, it was just a short trip. We read it in one sentence. But this was, we talked last week about the great adventure. Joseph and Mary were taken off on a great adventure simply to go to Bethlehem to be registered in the census. 4 or 5 day journey, where are we going to stay along the road? No Holiday Inn Express. Not even a Motel 6. There might be a roadside inn, but don't count on it because there's a lot of people traveling. Maybe you have friends and relatives along the way that might let you crash in their spare room, which was the most common way to travel in those days. But you couldn't even call ahead and let them know because there was no cell service. There was no postal service to send you a message. Hey, be coming through your town Thursday. Can we stay with you? If you're lucky to communicate, you might find, hey, are you going toward, would you care to drop this off at Joe's house on the street right there next to the wool dyeing shop? And good luck getting it there. See, when we look at 2,000-year-old events through 21st century eyes, we don't really grasp how difficult this simple one-sentence journey was. And what happens beyond that, it gets even more interesting as it goes. So it was while they were there, the days were completed for her to be delivered, and she brought forth her firstborn son and wrapped him in swaddling cloths and laid him in a manger because there was no room for them in the inn. When you delve into it, you look at the Greek on that, the inn, you know, we see inn and we think about a hotel. We might think about something like, you know, we would see in a Robin Hood movie where there's a tavern that serves food and got a couple of rooms for somebody to stay and a stable for your horse. But realistically, all the Greek says there, it was a place to break your journey. You know, we think about things in our perspective and it's a little different. So, you know, I mean, this whole trip, every night was an adventure. Where are we going to get something to eat? Where are we going to sleep? Are we going to be able to get inside a structure, or are we sleeping outside the night? And they finally get to Bethlehem, and it sounds like, well, you know, there's no room for them in the inn, and we've all seen the movie where they go out to the nice little barn and fluff up some straw somewhere, and they stay the night there, and the baby's born. And we draw that from the fact that they laid him in a manger. Well, what's a manger? A manger's a feeding trough. Typically, in that day, animals were usually housed not in a barn but in a cave. So it may not have been a nice, warm, fluffy place with lots of straw. It might have been a cave or something dug back into an embankment or an old shanty or a shed. But we put our 20th century eyes on it and we see it a different way. And that sounds so easy. She brought forth her firstborn son. Did anybody attend her? Was there a midwife around? Was there anyone there to help? By the way, there were no painkillers, you know. So, you know, here is this woman, probably alone with her husband, giving birth to a child in a place where animals live. What an adventure. Now, you stop and think about it a little while. This wasn't a woman who had born children before. This wasn't a 20-something. She wasn't a 30-something. Odds are she was a teenager. She was away from home. She was away from her mother to help her. She was away from everyone she loved and cared about with the exception of her husband. And she knows that this is a completely unique birth because she knows what the origin of this birth is. But man, what an experience it had to be. What an emotional roller coaster. Oh, it's now? This is going to happen now? I don't have anybody to help me. It's difficult. difficult. Real people doing real things. But she has the child. And then we find another extraordinary event that happens to some very ordinary people. Now, there was in the same country shepherds living out in the fields, keeping watch over their flock by night. And behold, an angel of the Lord stood before them, and the glory of the Lord shone round about them, and they were greatly afraid. You better believe it. Then the angel said to them, "Do not be afraid, for behold, I bring you good tidings of great joy, which shall be to all people. For there is born to you this day in the city of David a Savior, who is Christ the Lord. And this will be the sign to you. You'll find a babe wrapped in swaddling clothes and lying in a manger." All right, shocking experience, right? Here's some guys doing what they do every night. There were various ways that people would be shepherds. Sometimes you might own the flock. But if you were wealthy enough to own that large flock, odds are you weren't spending the night in the field with them. You paid somebody to do that. And generally speaking, the ones that you could get to work in the middle of the night might have been the ones that were kind of young. Remember David? Stayed after, watched after his father's sheep late at night. Or they might have been too old to get another job, but yet they could sit out there by the fire and watch the sheep. You know, these are not, you would assume that if you're going to send the birth announcement out for the Savior of the world, that you would send it to the elite, to the people who were important. But yet, that's not what happens. This extraordinary birth announcement goes to a bunch of night shift shepherds, and they see this extraordinary event. An angel with a message, and as angels are wont to do, they said, "Hey, don't be afraid. It's cool. Not here to judge you, here to deliver a message." And then it gets even more bizarre because there was suddenly with the angel a multitude of the heavenly host praising God and saying, "Glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace, goodwill toward men." So it was when the angels had gone away from them into heaven, the shepherds said to one another, "Let us now go to Bethlehem and see this thing that's come to pass, which the Lord has made known to us." And they came with haste and found Mary and Joseph and the babe lying in a manger. Now, wait a minute. Who's watching the sheep? They all load up and go to Bethlehem. Who's watching the master's sheep? What happens if someone comes and steals the master's sheep? What happens if the wolf comes and raids the sheepfold? Real people making real decisions. So we've got this situation where, again, people are confronted with something extraordinary. How many of you would jump and leave your job to go see something because you saw an angelic visitation? I think I would. Because it's just so simply extraordinary. But they don't hesitate. They don't have to figure out what's going on. They just load and go. And they go and they see this thing. They came with haste and found them. Now when they'd seen him, they made widely known the saying which was told them concerning this child. Boy, boy, boy. What a day it was. Now, the shepherds come and they worship this child. And we have our preconceptions of what that looked like. Everybody that's got a nativity set has got a shepherd. And what do the shepherds look like? You got one that's got a lamb on his shoulders. Doesn't say anywhere that they brought their animals with them. They might have. They might not have. But, you know, we, in our modern world, we read these old words and we see them through the lens of what we've been told and what we've seen, what some artist's impression was, and we read into them our own ideas. I have a friend of mine who's a pastor, and he said the thing that really struck him one day was this. He said he had heard in his denomination people preaching for years that Noah was a preacher of righteousness for 100 years, and all the time that he was building the ark, he was preaching to people. It's not in there. Not in the story. What is in the story was this. When God told Noah to go build an ark, sentence was passed, the judgment was cast in stone, you and the people that I tell you to put in the ark with you are going with you, and everybody else is going to be looking for a snorkel real soon. There was no need for Noah to preach. But see, we hear these things and we're taught these things, and we never look at it through fresh eyes. We never try to climb into this book and think about what those people experienced. And it would help us if we would do that. Because, you know, we look at this, we read these stories, and we see in our mind's eye these plastic saints on a shelf that are just so stoic and so in control and so faithful, and we never see the struggles behind them, the things that they have to think about. This journey that we would undertake today with no second thought at all, the worst thing we'd have to figure out is if there's enough gas in the tank to drive from Nazareth to Bethlehem, and is there any place we can get a hamburger along the road. And we would just zing down there, sign our name on the registry, and drive back. And if Mary's time came and she was going to have this child, there's a hospital somewhere we can stop at. Or we can get to it pretty quick. But that wasn't the way it was here. This was a humongous event just simply to make the journey. Who's watching Joseph's shop to be sure somebody doesn't carry his tools off while he's gone for 2 weeks? Who's doing all these things? Who's taking care of the details? Yet we come into our modern world and we feel like God's calling us to do something. We feel like there's something that we are supposed to do, and we immediately start to count the cost about how inconvenient it's going to be. And we don't say, you know what? If God called me to do this, it will be all right. He will make a way where there is no way. He'll send John in front of you to make straight the pass so that there is a way that you can accomplish what He's calling you to do. But yet we back up and we say, no, my reputation will take a hit if I do that. I can't do that. People will talk about me if I do this. I can't do that. It's just so inconvenient, I'll have to miss Survivor on Wednesday night if I go do that. And my DVR is full, I can't even record it. We stumble over the simplest things. And this journey, let's assume that Joseph and Mary thought that this journey was going to be, hey, 4 days down, 4 days back, everything's cool. Well, it didn't turn out that way either. We'll talk more next week about what happened after the birth. But just as a bit of a primer, so Mary delivers this baby, and she's kind of stuck for a while. Okay? First of all, she is ritually unclean. After delivering a child, a male child, the woman's ritually unclean for 40 days, according to the Old Testament Jewish law. Therefore, she has to conduct herself like she does monthly with the nidah, which means she can't be around people. She's supposed to be off by herself somewhere. So she can't be traveling during this period. And oh, by the way, at the end of that period, she's got to give an offering. And in the midst of that, at 8 days, the baby has to be circumcised and given his name. So this 2-week trip turns into at least a 40 or 50 day odyssey before they ever get back to Nazareth. So when we stop and think about this thing, this was a huge event for them. And we in our modern age are so inconvenienced by the slightest bump in the road. Now, those of you who know me well know that I like to have a course planned, and I need to walk that course, and unexpected interruptions if I'm not real careful, I can get really aggravated with them. Talk about unexpected interruptions to your life. These guys had a huge one. I think a lot of us make our decisions that way. We see these events that come up, which are either God-ordained or are opportunities to exercise our faith, and we see them as inconveniences instead of opportunities. Somebody comes and bothers you. Is that an interruption or is that an opportunity? Or is there something in the back of your mind, in your spirit, that says, I really need to say something encouraging? This person might be struggling. I need to minister to them. I need to share a little bit about where my stability comes from with them. Or is it an interruption? That person that you've talked to umpteen times and you see them on the caller ID and say, oh no, it's them again. Really? Should we do that? Or should we look at everything as an opportunity? Now, a possible exception to that might be those people trying to sell you extended warranties and umpteen other things that aggravate us to death. But you know, at the end of the day, those people are doing a job. And we really shouldn't be so aggravated at them. Opportunities. One of the biggest lessons I think that the modern church has to learn is this. If God calls you to do something, He will make provision for you to be able to do that. And we can trust Him. We talked last week at length about Mary, the way that she received this extraordinary message and her reaction, as opposed to the reaction of Zacharias and the reaction of Elizabeth. Mary just simply embraced it. So this is extraordinary. I've never heard anything like this before, but let it be. We need to be a whole lot more like Mary. If we know the voice of God, if we hear the voice of God, if we know that thing tugging in our spirit is from above and not from some other source, then we've got to remember, if God calls us to do it, He will make the path for us to do it. He'll give us the tools that we need to get through it. He'll give us the opportunities that we need to get through it. He'll give us the grace we need to get through it. About almost 20 years ago now, I was at a men's meeting for the Methodist Church, and this man presented an opportunity. So we're doing a building and ministry trip to Belize. At that point I heard that, I didn't know where Belize was. For those of you who don't know, it's next door to Guatemala in Central America. And there's this opportunity, we're going to take this mission trip down there. And I remember turning to another fellow that I was there with, as he turned to me, and simultaneously we both said, I'm going. And at the point, I was working for a man who was very harsh and rigid. How was I going to get 2 weeks off? And was I going to be able to get 2 weeks off and still get paid for the 2 weeks that I was going? Where was I going to get the funding to pay for my part in that trip to go? There were a lot of unanswered questions. But much like these folks, when that opportunity was presented, there was just simply no doubt, I'm going. I knew that I had been called to go on that trip. I had no idea how it was going to happen. Turned around, presented it to the boss, said, fine, good idea, go. Enjoy yourself. We'll pay you while you're gone. Like, this is unexpected. I did not expect to hear that from that man. And then, when we mentioned it to our church family, the other gentleman and I both attended the same church at the time, and the donations rolled in. And there was, the financial obligations were just wiped away. And it actually turned into, in that case, a fairly easy thing to happen. The reason I say that is this. If God calls you to go through a door, He'll open the door. He He'll make the provision. If He calls you to do a ministry, He'll make it possible. Doesn't say He'll make it easy, but He'll make it possible. You may have to knock on doors and humble yourself. You may have to experience some personal sacrifice. But if He has called you to do something, He will make it possible. Well, I don't have the skills to do that. Well, have you ever heard of spiritual gifts? If He can cause a donkey to talk, He can provide you with what you need to do what He's calling you to do. And I think maybe if we reacted a whole lot more like these people that we've seen, like a cartoon, if we put ourselves in their position, it wasn't an easy walk for Joseph and for Mary. From the point that the angelic visitation happened that says, "Hail, highly favored one," from that point all the way through an empty tomb some 30-some years later, it could not have been an easy walk for Mary or Joseph, either one. There had to be those people still talking about, you know that baby's not Joseph's, right? You know that before they had had their home taking, that she was already with child. People talk behind their hands then like they do now. And then what a burden there had to be on Mary, who knew what that angel had said, who knew what this child was called to do. Mamas, you second guess yourselves raising your children every day, right? Did I do the right thing? Did I say the right thing? Should I have let them do this? Should I have stopped them from doing that? Have I given them everything they need? How much more Mary had to have those thoughts? What am I? You know, I'm taking care of this once in eternity child. What if I make a mistake? What if I do something wrong? What if I let him do something and he gets hurt? Faith is the answer to those questions. You know, we can put things in God's hands and He will indeed take care of them. So I guess the message this morning is very simply this. It's the angel's message: fear not. If God's calling you to do something, fear not about doing it. If He has put a desire in your heart to do something in the kingdom, fear not. Step out and do it. If there might be some adversities or some difficulties on the road ahead to get to that point, fear not, because He is the one who makes a way where there is no way. He is the one who provides when there is no provision available. If we trust, if we can have faith, then there is absolutely nothing that is impossible for us to do if He's called us to do it. Now, we go off half-cocked on our own, that's a completely different road. If we work something up in our own mind that's not a message from above, that's not something we're called to do, then you're kind of on your own. I mention this one frequently. That prodigal son thought he had the world by the tail. He got daddy's money, and off he took to conquer the world. And it wasn't long before his wisdom bit him. He was out of money, and when he was out of money, he was out of friends. And when he was out of money and out of friends both, he ends up slopping the hogs. He says, "Boy, you know what? Daddy's servants have it better. Maybe I ought to go home." You see, when we try to do things in our own wisdom, it never works. It might work for the short term. We might think it's going to work, but payday's coming. The last thing I want to mention here today is this. As difficult as this journey was for that young family, we walk difficult journeys too. This last 2 years has been a nightmare. We've lost friends. We've lost family members. We felt like we were imprisoned in our homes, or felt like that we were in some science fiction novel where we had to wear hazmat suits 24/7, 365 to avoid the plague. We've had all of these difficulties. We've had some government edicts, very much like, hey, you got to go to your hometown and get taxed. Doesn't matter what's going on, but you got to go. You got to do this. We've had this time, and we feel like that we've been through some difficult times, but you know what the good news is? All of us have made it this far. And in this season where we can talk about new beginnings, you know, there was a new thing that God was doing by bringing this child into the world. Why can't this season be a season of new beginnings for me, for you, for this church body? Why can't it be that God's ready to do a new thing like He did a new thing in Bethlehem 2,000 years ago? It can be. But you know what it takes in order to bring that into reality? It takes God's people acting like Mary did a long time ago and said, yeah, whatever you say, God, I'll do it. Whatever you want, I'll do it. Yeah, I know it might cost me something, but that's okay because you want me to do it, and therefore it'll come out in the end. Everything will be fine. And I think we've got to get over looking at ourselves and saying, well, that'll make me uncomfortable. People will talk about me. It doesn't matter. If they could do it as regular people, we can do it. The only question is God calling us to do it, and are we willing to answer that call? I'm sure none of the decisions that Joseph and Mary made all those years ago came easily. We might think they do, and that thing we say, yeah, I'll do it, in a moment of strength, you very often end up second-guessing that later. I wonder if they did, and we just don't have it written there. Being painfully human, I'm sure they probably had. You wonder if Mary woke up the next morning and said, did that really happen? Did that thing that just, was that a dream or did that really happen? And then she knew that it did. What are we going to do? Are we going to put our selfish interests aside and say, here am I, send me? Or are we going to stay selfish? Altars are open. If you need prayer for anything in specific, please come forward and we'll pray with you. Other than that,